Hi everyone, welcome to the Christian Emerging Creatives podcast. My name is Lydia Hahn. I am a pre-professional dancer and follower of Christ, soon to emerge from Toronto Metropolitan University. Throughout this podcast, I'll be talking about the Christian faith from a creative point of view and the experiences of emerging artists at the beginning of their careers. Welcome to season one. Hello, and welcome to the last episode of this season's Christian Emerging Creatives podcast.
That's so exciting.
Throughout, we have witnessed many testimonies of my artistic friends in their journeys of faith and art. We've heard them share the gospel and their artistic environments and what God has taught them and is teaching them as they continue to pursue the faith and art. Today, our last guest is Abigail Poo.
Hello, I'm here.
Could you introduce yourself to the listeners?
Oh, yes. Yes, my name is Abigail. They just call me Abby, most of you guys.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Abby. yeah, I am a fourth-year student in the professional music program at Toronto Metropolitan University. I have a background in music, so I learned both piano and violin to the certificate levels. But here at school, I'm studying mostly the music industry, including production and labels and what artists do and what that life looks like. And I've been learning a lot. And yeah, I'm going to be graduating soon, so I'll be working. And I'm currently looking, hopefully, into the video game space because I did my internship there. So I'm excited to hopefully go in that direction moving forward.
Awesome. So, Abby, like you said, you have a background in piano and violin and music in general growing up. So yeah. Could you share to the listeners how you grew your passion for music and what you like about music in general?
Oh, how I grew my passion for music? That's a hard one. Because I feel like music has been such a big part of my life that I don't really know where to start.
Hmm.
Yeah, well, I started learning violin first when I was a kid. No, actually, even before that. My parents kind of knew that I had an interest in music because we had a piano at home. And one day my dad walked in and found me trying to play the piano, imitating like church pianists. I had this book open, and it was like a book of the different fruits for little kids, and I was pretending that was the score. So I had that book open, and I was like playing random notes on the piano, pretending to be one of them, and then I started playing with my feet, and he was like, okay, we need to give her piano lessons. So that's kind of where that started. But before I learned piano, I learned violin first because according to my dad, I saw a violinist playing, and I looked at him and I pointed at the violinist and was like, I want to be like that. And then like the very next week I was enrolled in violin lessons. So I learned piano and violin from a young age as a kid, but I wouldn't say I was really into it yet. I kind of did it as like, you know, the regular extracurricular. I actually struggled to find motivation to practice a lot in my early years. I think it was around middle school around middle school that I started to explore on my own the different kinds of music out there. And I started listening to a lot of music online, whatever I could find. A lot of like orchestral stuff. I just fell in love with all the music that I found. I watched like a lot of anime at the time, so I started listening to a lot of like J-pop, J-rock, and also orchestral music like Two Steps from Hell, like music soundtracks. Like Interstellar came out at the time. It was like 2014, and I was so absolutely good. Obsessed with it, and things like that. So I started to kind of fall into this this realm of looking for music on my own. And then in high school, I joined the Arts Unionville music program, and for the very first time, I was making music together with people. And orchestra was both the most nerve-wracking and the most exciting time of my life. Nerve-wracking because you really have to play your part. As part of the team, and if you like make a mistake, it's it affects the whole team. So it made me nervous in that, but I also found it really exciting being able to play music with people like this. And from there, I think my love for music just kept on growing and growing. I would listen to all sorts of music. I would try creating music. In COVID, I started making music, and I discovered that I really, really like production. And then the path opened for me to come into the professional music program, and here I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always wondered, because I don't know if it's an, I guess you could say it's like an Asian stereotype where like all the parents would get the kids to learn piano and like some sort of musical instrument because it was good for their discipline. Did you ever, and you kind of touched upon that when you were younger, you didn't really like have a passion for violin or piano and music until much later.
Yeah.
So do you think you had or have a love and hate relationship with this art?
I think, well, there's definitely been that struggle when I was a kid, but whatever feelings of like not love or whatever feelings of hate I had towards it, I think have slowly dwindled away. And now I just love it. I really truly just love what I do. I think, yeah, when I was a kid, my parents, they decided piano was kind of the mandatory, like I should definitely at least learn this because it's good for my musical development. But violin was totally, that was totally by my own wish. And actually, yeah, the love-hate relationship was that I wanted to keep learning violin because I like the instrument itself, but I hated the practice. So I wouldn't practice, and it would be kind of a waste of, I guess, time and money. And there was a time where my dad was like, you know what, you don't really seem to like it. Like, I think we should just pull out and, like, you know, like, let's not waste any time. I don't want to waste your time either. And we almost pulled out. But my mom, she was like, no! Let her keep learning! Like, even if she doesn't like it now, like, eventually, like we won't regret it, like, keeping her in it. And then I guess my mom won that, so they kept me in. And I'm so glad they did. Because once I reached high school and I joined my school music program, I think something switched in me to really truly love my instrument. Maybe like it was the group experience of being with my friends playing together. But something in me changed and made me like start to love my instrument. Actually, when I graduated grade 12, I had finished my level 10, and I never planned to do the certificate. But in first year, I missed it so much. It didn't help that I was teaching at a music school, and like in the next door, I could hear a bunch of people like students playing the violin, and it'd be like, oh, I missed this. But in the second year, I came back to my teacher, and I was like, I really, really want to do the certificate. This time, it was not my parents. Like, my parents never forced me, but like this time, it wasn't even their money. They were like, you handle all the finances. So I paid for everything. I paid for the books. I paid for the exam. I paid for all the lessons.
Wow.
It was probably the most fun self-project I've ever taken on, like, ever. And now I just love it. Like, the art of performance. And the art of creation, too. Though that was more on my own.
Wow. What a responsible young woman. Paying for everything, that's really good. So, yeah. Now we're going to head into more of your faith journey. So what was that like growing up? You don't have to share your entire life story with God, but just a summary of how you got to know Christ.
I guess I do have to summarize my my life story in a way. But I think it all started when I was around 7 years old. My parents had to go on a short-term mission to Panama. And they didn't want to leave me a lone, single, seven-year-old child here. So they brought me with them to this short-term mission. And what I saw changed my life. I mean, I hadn't been alive for very long, but what I saw changed my life. Because I saw a completely different world. A lot of people, I guess, less fortunate than us, or just in a very different culture from us as well.
Yes.
But they had so much joy, and the way they praised God really, really struck me while we were on that short-term mission. So it was 20, 2010. In 2010, December 24, Christmas Eve, one of the short-term mission members shared the gospel with me, and my young 7-year-old self said, "Yes, I want to follow Jesus." And that was the first time I accepted Christ into my life. But I think there was a lot to learn, because you know when you're 7, sometimes you don't really... There's a lot of things that, obviously, I still had to understand, such as the weight of my sin, or the character of God, which I learned as I grew up. My mom started serving at our church when I was in grade 5, and we actually switched churches for this move, but that was a time of pretty difficult change for our family. It was a lot of stress for her, and my dad had to take on a lot more a lot more housework, such as caring for me. And I saw how stressed my mom was, yet she also never stopped praising God or giving glory to God, which, coming from someone so close to me, like as a role model, that also struck me a little bit. Now, when you're a pastor's kid, you get to see a lot of things, a lot of stories of other people, because obviously she had to care for people. One of her main roles is like praying and care. So I would hear a lot of stories of people who, for example, were in like terminal cancer, or like they had like this terrible illness and they would heal from it by the grace of God. Or I would hear stories of people who were so deep in sin, but then God worked in their life. And when they acknowledged God, they completely changed. God completely changed them and healed them. So I would hear all these stories, and these aren't just like stories of people I didn't know. These were people like all around me whose lives were impacted by God. And it made me realize that God is working around me. And when I was around in mid-high school, I also had such an experience. I also struggled with sin in areas of my life, and I realized my depravity, and I cried out to God. And God showed me not just his forgiving power, but also his healing power. Because as a mentor prayed for me and checked in with me, I was also able to overcome some sins of my own. So that was kind of my experience. And I think everything with God just deepened from there. God's taught me so many things since. I remember right before going into high school, this was during COVID, it was in the middle of COVID, and everyone was like really sad, and like it was just a tough time.
What a depressing time.
But we had this online prayer meeting. They were doing prayer for people, so you could just come on and be prayed for. And I also wanted to be prayed for. I don't remember exactly if this was the case, but I wanted something along the lines of experiencing God. And then they prayed for me. And as they prayed for me, I felt so overwhelmed by something. Now I know it was, God touched my heart. It was the Spirit. But at that time, I was like, it would be so cliche if I cried right now. I literally have no reason to cry. Why am I crying? it was this inexplicable feeling of being overwhelmed. Because I literally had no reason to feel that way.
Yeah.
Like what? I woke up, I ate breakfast, logged on to this thing that my mom told me about.
Yeah.
And, like, I didn't experience anything that had led me to feel that way, but God had happened. Yeah, God had done something there. And I think that was the precursor to me going into university, where God has shown me so many things in my 4 years here, of how real he is in my life, of how good he is, of how much we desperately need him, which I can't tell all the stories right now. I mean, unless I'm further prompted. But, yeah, long story short, I have been walking with God since very young, but God has only shown me more and more about him, leading me to trust him even more and love him even more. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what's really interesting is that I was talking with Bethany in an earlier episode.
Nice. Yeah.
And we were talking about children's love, or a child's perspective of who God is and what God's love is.
Mm-hmm.
And you're sharing about how when you were 7,
mm-hmm.
right, that you're like, oh, I accept Jesus Christ as my savior. Mm-hmm. And it's like so simple, and it's so like, but you don't understand all the depth behind that meaning.
Yeah.
But you know it's a good thing to do, and mm-hmm. so you do it. Mm-hmm. And so similarly for me as a fellow pastor's kid, mm-hmm. I also accepted Christ when I was 7. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh, like, I feel like it's time, and mm-hmm. I want people at my Christian school to know that I accept Christ as my savior. Mm-hmm. So in bed, I'm like, I accept Jesus Christ as my savior. Voila. And it's so like, as a kid. And then like growing up, like you, and I think especially through our 4 years, like mm-hmm. you learn more about your sin and like how broken you are mm-hmm. and how much everyone needs God mm-hmm. and how desperate we are, because then we see God's holiness.
Yeah.
And that's such like a different perspective.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, I related to that a little bit more.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. I feel like, I think it's beautiful the journey that God guides us through, because the gospel is, it's friendly for both the young and the old, for both the simple and the wise.
It's meant for everyone.
Yeah. As a kid, we understand that we do bad things, but we also see that God is a good God. And when we accept him, I mean, there's no way a 7-year-old can understand all of the terrible things in the world or all the wonderful stories that can come from those even. But there's a lot of depth that a kid cannot understand yet. And I think God showed me as I grew older, with the right timing and in the right place, as he deemed it. But with all the things he showed me, it led me to understand more, a realer and more vivid image of who he is, or the depth of who God is and what he's done for the world. Mm-hmm. So God has become more real in my life over time in that sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm. So now heading into faith and art intersecting, connecting.
Yeah.
How have you seen the connection of God and music for yourself?
God and music. That's a great question. That's a big question. Yeah, I think music is a wonderful gift that God has given us. I think God has given us a lot of gifts, but in my life, music is like, thank God for music. Because it's given me so much joy and also many reasons to do things and to see beauty in life. Yeah, I genuinely think it's one of the wonderful things that he's put in our world for us to enjoy. Kind of like how mathematicians, they admire the science of numbers and how numbers can work to do great things. That's kind of how I feel about music. It's like, we can continue to discover new things about it and use it as a language, use it as a medium, but ultimately, God is the one who even makes all of this possible. So yeah, I think music is a gift from God. In terms of how faith informs music, I think it's really difficult for me to connect faith and music. Mm. Now I've had moments where I've really seen God use music to worship him and to move my heart to see his goodness. One example was when I went on a short-term mission to Kazakhstan in September. My mom had organized a prayer meeting, and I'd seen a lot that week that really, like, shook me.
I'm sure.
Yeah, but we had this prayer meeting, and she started the prayer meeting with a hymn. And the hymn was Be Still for the Glory of the Lord. The Holy One is here. So that was the first lyric. I don't know if that's what the hymn is called, but that was the first lyric, and it was like the most beautiful hymn I'd ever heard. And the message itself is beautiful. Be still, for the glory of the Lord is here. But put to music, put to an actual hymn, it really moved me, and I like started crying because it's like God is here, he's working in this country. And that was an example in which the music kind of brought me, I don't think the music like manipulated me, though music obviously it has the ability to like alter, affect our emotions. But I think in that case, the message is true, and the music brought me to realize in a deeper heart level sense, the realness of that truth. So that's one way in which I think music can be used to speak truths in our life about God. I've had similar moments, like, for example, when I was a teen, in teens conference, like when they would be sharing the message about God, and we would sing these songs praising God, and in that music, the lyrics we were singing to God, about how good God is, and about how he saves, I think the music brought the truth, which is already true, but it brought it to a deeper level of realization. Another example is that I was in Nashville 2 weeks ago, and we'd spent that entire week, this was part of a class, we'd spent the entire week learning about the industry, the music industry there, but the music industry there is also very saturated with Christian music. And the very last day I went to a church, and seeing all these musicians use their gifts to sing to God, maybe it was because I was in a different country or city too, but the hymns really spoke to me that day. The song, like Goodness of God, for example, which is funny because we had another testimony today sharing about this specific song. But
yeah.
When I was there with a friend singing about how God has always been faithful and so good. And there's another song about God's mercy. All of those, of course, are already true, but the music, the act of singing to God, worshiping him for it with song, made it so much more real in my heart. So those are examples in which I can see how faith informs music, or how music is also used to complement a faith that is already there. But I would be lying if I said that I can perfectly see the overlap. Actually, I struggle a lot with using music in a faith context, because a lot of times it goes something like this. We'll be singing songs in church, and all I can think about is, ooh, that's a nice G major 7 chord used there. Like, that's all I can think about. Like, because now I'm also a little bit more well-versed in the art of, like, live mixing and production. And it's like, ooh, yeah, we could have EQ'd that a little better. Mm. Or, like, this specific frequency. I know that frequency! Oh, my goodness! Like, I could probably name, like, the hertz range. Like, yeah. stuff like that will fly in my head. Uh-huh. And I get so distracted by the music that I can't actually focus on worship. I've struggled with this a lot. Not just growing up. Not just even, like, now, but also growing up.
And you also have perfect pitch, so I'm sure you're like, ooh, that was a good, or that was, oh, maybe that was a little off.
Like, I'll always think about these, and then I'll go, like, two verses and be like, wait, so what was I actually singing about? Or did I actually mean what I sang? It's a whole lot of that throughout my life, and it's been a struggle for me to really, like, focus on and worship in my heart the words being sung. Because I'll always think about these things. Some people say it's, like, really good to fill your... If you listen to a lot of music, I've heard it's a good spiritual discipline to listen to more worship music. I found that, actually, growing up, I avoided a lot of worship music.
Really?
Yeah. Because it sounded like a lot of country music to me.
That's fair.
no shade to country. I'm okay with it. But, like... I've also found myself most moved by the orchestral, electronic music.
I understand.
And you don't get a lot of worship music like that. Mm. So just in that sense, I never really took the time to truly listen to the music. And I also feel like if I listen to worship music, like, I feel compelled to, like, want to mean it. Right? If I'm listening to it, I might as well be worshiping. Like, listening to it in a purposeful worshiping manner. Yeah. So I think it's actually complicated for me. I'm still figuring it out. Mm. Yeah, in terms of how faith overlaps with music. Yeah.
Yeah. In your creative processes, either with school or like even during your own personal time creating music, have you incorporated your faith in the process? And if you have, what did that look like for you?
Incorporated it definitely in a performance sense, and also in a philosophical sense. So performance wise in that these are skills that I can use to serve in my church or in worship, right? And I thank God for those gifts that he's allowed me to serve in this way. So I'll use those gifts in that regard. And also, as I continue to practice and improve my craft, remembering that it is God who allows me to play these things and to have the privilege to continue studying these, that is something that always points me to God. In terms of creation, I don't think so. Not really. I've tried. Like, how can I write music in a way dedicated to God? And all that comes back to is, what hymn can I set this to?
Yeah.
What lyrics? I don't have lyrics. How am I supposed to use this in any way that glorifies God when I don't have any lyrics? I don't write lyrical music. And then when I think lyrics, I start to think of like Hillsong style.
Yeah.
Or like hymn style. And
there's already so much like hymns and worship music out there that you can't help but think of those when you're creating.
Yeah. Sometimes. It's like, how can I create something that worships God that's not that? I don't know. But I also don't particularly feel inspired, like, at all to create that kind of thing. Like, unless I scored for, like, a film about Jesus or something, I really don't know how I would use this. Yeah.
I was talking to, or well, in a lot of the episodes before with our guests, we talked about living your Christian faith in the industry amongst your peers.
Yeah.
How has that looked like for you? Do people know that you're a Christian in your program or in the work field?
Being a Christian in the creative sphere is definitely not easy. I will say that. I struggled with it a lot because when you come into a field like this, you're gonna encounter a lot of nuances. And also a lot of situations that you're not going to be warned about. My closest friends know I'm Christian. And people at my workplace do too. Because I'll like allude to it and I'll talk about like my life outside. And if I have friends that I get close enough to, I can also invite them to fellowship or even pray for them. Like, having those experiences are always, always beautiful. But I would say it's not like anyone just knows things about me, because I think most people don't know things about my personal life, period. I struggled with sharing or being very publicly open about anything about me for quite a few years coming into university. Yeah, there's a story. Can I tell this story?
Yeah, sure.
So coming into first year, I found myself face to face with a lot of people who have very different values from me. And even if they have perceptions of Christianity, they might think of it in a very negative view, or they might accept it but see it in a very, or live it in a very different way. And I saw some people in my life who said they were Christian, but then they would do a lot of things that did not really reflect a living faith, I guess you could say. And then I would see that people noticed it, and they'd be like, oh, you're Christian, but like, you know, you do like all this. Like, they would say that. And I thought, oh my goodness, if I let them know I'm Christian and then I accidentally mess up, that's what they think Christians are going to be like forever. And in my head, I thought, if I can't live out a faith good enough, I might as well just never tell them I'm Christian at all, so as to not cause them to stumble.
Wow.
I think God has changed my perspective over time. I don't really believe that now, because I realized that so much of that view was relying on myself to witness and not God to do the work. And one thing God has taught me over time is that our mess ups don't stop God's work from happening. God can work through our mess ups. God can work in many different ways. And when God works through us, it's not because we were being such good Christians by our own efforts or anything. It's because we are relying on Him to do the work. And one thing I was taught, I remember my pastor was talking about this once, when we want to be better as Christians, it's not by our own power. Rather, we go to God. We spend more time with God, praying with God, coming to Him as we are in all our imperfections, and then let God change us. Because when people see Christians living out their faith and they see that that's different, that's God working through them. That's all the change that they've gone through over time because God has been working in their life, not because suddenly they decided to be good. And that kind of changed my perspective on things. So now I think in recent years I've become more open with my faith about telling people. I'm not being afraid to tell people that I'm Christian. And if I mess up, you know, I mean, it's not preferable, but I know that God has grace and that He can, whatever I do, even if I mess up sometimes, it won't stop God's work from happening. I guess I've come to share my faith more openly.
Yeah, it's definitely tough when there are already so many stereotypes and feelings towards Christianity in a worldly sense. Mm-hmm. I think I struggle with the fact that, I assume the fact that a lot of people in the dance program will reject me because I'm a Christian, mm-hmm. or they dislike Christianity because of their feelings toward it, whether it be hate or like maybe it's something they experienced before, mm-hmm. or just like, well, like, why does Jesus matter? Why does believing in a God even matter? Mm-hmm. And why is the Bible true? Like, these are things that I'm scared to face,
yeah.
a lot of the times,
yeah.
or like tough conversations to have.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to Bethany,
mm-hmm.
one night, and she was like, but Lydia, like, when we go to heaven and you see some of your friends, like, persecuted and going to hell,
mm-hmm.
they're gonna be like, why didn't you share this wonderful news? Why didn't you tell us there's a way,
yeah.
for this life, or what the purpose of this life is?
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't you tell us earlier? And that's like done. There's nothing you can do anymore because they haven't accepted Jesus Christ as their savior.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, that's a super tough image, but it's the truth.
Yeah.
And that kind of brings everything to more of like a different perspective when I think about Christians, especially in the arts, where there are so many liberal views.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I've come to realize how important, I guess, prayer is in all of this as well. Because in recent times, I've actually experienced, like before I rely on my own efforts to tell them or to, like, evangelize, why don't I go to God? And I would pray by name for all of my friends, to God, and He did these amazing things in the following weeks where He'd actually open up opportunities. Like, I wouldn't have to like force or try to like make them happen. God would provide the opportunity. It'd be kind of crazy sometimes, because like, wow, this crazy opportunity presented for my friend to conveniently come to church with me, or like to come to fellowship or whatever. And it's like, I didn't really orchestrate this. God just kind of, from heaven placed this thing. And it makes me realize every time that it's not by our own power. It's not by anything we do, but it's all by God. And we just get to participate in His good work, really. Because in the end, we can do a lot of things, but it is God who changes hearts.
Yes. Not us.
Yeah. So that's also kind of a flip side to, like, to that as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's that in the end, God is in full control. Mm-hmm. And that's given me a lot more peace about things like this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, this is kind of a different topic-ish, but we're talking about worship and how we can, like, get distracted with worship sometimes, and, like, how it sounds, or mm-hmm. how the worship leaders are performing it, or leading a congregation, or leading a group of people.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about Christian concerts.
Mm-hmm.
So, basically, Elevation Worship came a couple of days ago.
Uh-huh.
And I went with a couple of ACF members, yeah. and there's 16,000 people mm-hmm. in Scotiabank Arena.
Yeah.
And it was amazing to see so many people, Christians or non-Christians, just this amount of people gather to be in a place to worship God.
Yeah.
It was so, like, I don't know. It felt so rare to me that mm-hmm. this would happen, and I was excited for that.
Yeah.
But I think obviously, like, it has its, like, like pros and cons.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I was really trying to not uplift Elevation Worship above God,
mm-hmm.
but listening to the lyrics of the worship songs they had set and, like, praising God for what he's done and who he is was my goal.
Mm-hmm.
But it was interesting to me because I was so, like, I would be a little distracted because of, like, oh my goodness. So we had, like these bracelets.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It felt like a Taylor Swift concert mm-hmm. where you have, like, a bracelet and then it's, like, everyone's bracelets would light up.
Yeah.
Because it would be controlled
yeah.
by the tech. And you could see, like, the lights. Like, I was mesmerized.
Mm-hmm.
by the lighting of, like, the stadium yeah. and, like, how that amplified some of the worship songs or, like, if the drummer was playing, like, a really cool riff
mm-hmm.
or, like, if a vocalist was pouring their heart out to God and they do these crazy, like, whoa, you know, like,
yeah,
it was, like, oh, like, that was so cool.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to ask, like, where's the balance between, like, yo, like, this technical element of music or, like, production and performance was so good, but I am worshiping God and all the glory goes back to God. You know? Yeah. I think that was something I'm currently, like, thinking about now that the concert is over.
Uh-huh. This is such a tough question. Because there's so many different factors that go into it. Oh my goodness. Yeah, like, I guess first thing to consider is, like, what's the motive of such a concert, right? And I'm sure, like, the team performing, the team organizing, it might have been something along the lines of, like, we have this catalog of songs. Why don't we pull people together from different cities to worship God? But then that might not have been the goal of other stakeholders, such as the people they have the contract to make these concerts happen, right? Like, then you're considering all these other elements, like the people who plan, budget, the people who do the production, the AV, the people who prepare for all of these things. Like, for example, like, you've got the production team, the AV. If they are Christian, or if they are part of the Elevation team, how, like, what's their goal or their, like, how are they going to use their gifts in a way that glorifies God without distracting? And that's a question you have to ask, because maybe the motives could have been carried out clearly or not, because, you know, regardless of the intent, like, it could be translated to the audience
too. Yeah.
But if not, because most, like, if they were in, was it Scotiabank?
Yeah, it was at Scotiabank.
So, like, a lot of these people that are contracted, especially the people who do the haul-in, the people who do the AV and stuff, they're not affiliated, right? So if they don't have that goal, then
their mindset is going to be to make the show as banging cool as we can make it, right? And that's obviously a very different goal from giving glory to God. But that's not something that they can necessarily control, because this is how the industry works, right?
Right.
This is how collaborations and live stages happen. And then you've got, like, a lot of other things, like, what are the people coming for? Like, what is their goal in doing it? And then you've got so many different factors, because the motive can translate down in a way to the audience through all of these different funnels.
Yeah.
Right? That can either lead them to praise God. Maybe you could have a new Christian coming who hears all... Sorry, a new person who's not Christian come and hear all these things about, like, oh, like, who is this God? And they might become curious and want to know, who is this God that they sing about? At the same time, you could have people who, because the production is so good and, you know, the production team might be focused on making it, like, a banger, right? And, like, all these other things. Then you have people who come who don't come for the worship. They just come for, like, the cool concert, right? So it's because it's so complicated and there's so many things that go into it, it's hard to say whether or not this kind of thing, like, I guess, glorifies God outside of the original intent, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really have a solid answer on it.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have an answer on it either.
Yeah.
Have you been to any Christian concerts?
No, I haven't. That's also another thing. I don't think I have a first-person experience to inform me on making an opinion like this. I think if I went and I kind of knew what the vibe was, then I'd be able to better speak on this. But I haven't, so this is all I can really speak about from my knowledge of how these things go down. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I really liked how you talked about the production side of it. Mm-hmm. All the things that go into producing a concert. Mm-hmm. All the people that come into it, not just the performers, or, like, in this case, like, Elevation Worship and Pastor Stephen Furtick.
Yeah.
But a lot plays into it, and it just made me think about when I am creating art and I want to glorify God with it, like, what are the things that I need to, like, think about or, like, thoughtfully keep in mind for audiences?
Yeah.
You know, I was, like, thinking, and I was, like, talking to other people after the concert was over, and we were, like, sharing our thoughts, and, you know, there would be constructive criticism, or there would be, like, a lot of praise on the worship, and, like, how, like, what were people's favorite songs, and, like, what songs were, like, a little questionable, because there are some, like, songs, not just Elevation Worship, but worship songs in general that may not be theologically sound. Yeah. And it just got me thinking, like, whoa, like, especially, and if this goes back to when you were talking about messing up as a Christian in front of your friends, there's that, like, fear of, like, not doing it right. And when it's not done right, you're going to be criticized for it.
Yeah.
And that's something that, like, scares me a bit, knowing that if I am creating, choreographing, participating, performing in a work that I hoped would be a great example of Christianity, I wouldn't want it to be something that has a lot of mistakes or, like, things that are not theologically sound or things that distract people from God rather than bringing it to God, or, like, something that brings the praise to myself or the creators rather than God. And so I think right now I'm at the point where I'm like, whoa, like, this is so much to think about, and how should we continue using art to lift all the glory back to God and give these gifts back to God? Because I think the arts are so integral in the world,
mm-hmm.
but then also in Christianity.
Yeah,
it's just like the how you do it and the why you do it that's so important, and like once you're rooted in that, like that will lead you to a product that hopefully does the job of bringing it back to God.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't even know what I just said. Honestly, I think this is the first episode that I've talked this much.
No, that's awesome. That's awesome. Thank you. Thank you for sharing. Yeah, I guess a struggle for all like Christian creatives, it's like, how do we use our gifts in a way that glorifies God sufficiently? I guess that's like something that the word that like maybe we don't think about, but that's probably like kind of the inner thought, the inner like idea. It's like how do I do it in a way that's quote unquote sufficient?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's something to chew on, I think, for a lot of Christian creatives and artists as you endeavor through life.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we're near the tail end.
Oh my goodness.
We're near the end of this podcast, or yeah, this podcast and this episode. So my last question for you is, since you are about to graduate soon.
Oh my goodness.
As scary as it sounds, how would you like to see your faith in art continue? And what are things that God is challenging you with right now or preparing you for as you head into, you said you wanted to go into like the video game industry.
Well, I hope that God can show me a way in which I can use my creative gifts for his glory. Because I haven't really figured that out, that part out yet, to be honest. I hope that God will show me a way. Right now, as it stands, I feel like it's more so a way for me to get my foot in a specific, I guess you could say, industry or group of people, and I can witness there in a way that's not necessarily through my creative work, but just in the way I live. Though I think one of those challenges is that I can have the boldness to do so. Sometimes like being like super new and green in the industry makes me feel like a coward. Sometimes I don't really know how to talk about myself. I feel like everything I say, like I want to make a good impression, like network well.
Yeah.
Be able to establish a good first base. Mm-hmm. And it's like, how do I be a witness? Like, how do I share like about my faith and all those? It's like learning how to be a university student all over again, because I struggled with these things coming into undergrad.
Mm.
And then just when I started to feel like I was figuring them out, now I'm getting booted out and kicked into the next stage of my life. So, I hope I can figure that out. And hopefully this time, well, I mean, there's more time in the working world, but sometimes I feel like I figured it all out at the end of undergrad. And now I have no time to actually, like, live it out. Though there's a lot of things I still haven't figured out yet. Oh, my goodness. But
life.
Yeah. I hope that that God will guide me. I know that if I seek him first, that he will show the way. Because that's always kind of what I learned, right? It's like figuring it out on my own doesn't necessarily work. But when I rely on him, he will show me a way that I haven't seen before. So I believe that God will do that.
And that's so exciting. And so comforting to know that you don't have to figure it all right now yourself.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way you can do that.
Yeah.
Because God will open doors you can't see.
Yeah.
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 Well, yeah, thank you so much for being on this last episode with me.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we have come to an end, so we will say goodbye. Thank you so much for listening to these 6 episodes of my friends and me and how we feel about missional living as artists. And I hope if there is a season 2, maybe you'll see more, maybe you'll hear from more of them or more people. So yeah, we'll end it here for this last episode. So Abby, you can say bye.
Bye. God bless you all.
God bless you all.